Hey everyone, Christina here with a quick update before the episode actually starts. First off, I should clarify that this episode was recorded on June 2nd of 2020. I mostly say that because the United States and various other parts of the world have been going through quite a capital L lot of stuff recently. So I figured I would actually, like, put a date on when this was recorded to provide context in case any of it is needed. Also, since we didn't mention it in the episode, if you are someone who is interested in and would like to contribute financially to help the various relief and protest efforts going on around the globe, I would like to direct you to blacklivesmatters.carrd.co, which is a website that can help direct you to different ways to assist, whether it's signing petitions, whether it's calling your local representatives, whether it's making financial contributions to organizations that are helping. That is something that I personally am going to be doing, and I'm going to, you know, be tweeting about that and stuff on my personal account if having proof is important to any of you. I think accountability is important to me, so I'm going to do it. Also, in case it wasn't obvious by what I just said, Black Lives Matter, Trans Lives Matter, Black Trans Lives Matter, and LGBTQIA and everyone else on the spectrum, your rights matter too. And of course, In case the civil rights movement that we are finding ourselves in the middle of isn't enough to worry about, I would like to gently remind everyone that if you are going to be going to a protest or a demonstration, or if you're going to be in any kind of environment where there's, you know, a lot of people, please remember to wear a personal protection mask, regardless of what kind. If you have one, keep washing your hands, and please keep an eye on your health. You know, make sure that you keep track of what you're feeling. If you're sick, make sure that you take care of yourself so that you can get better. Because taking care of ourselves and helping to protect those around us and to make the world a better place is, you know, pretty much the mission of Wayward, if I haven't said it explicitly before. So I guess that's it. PSA over, and I hope that you enjoy the episode. You will hear me after the introduction music. So, thank you everyone, and thank you all for listening. My name is Christina, and thank you for checking into the Home for Rabbit OCs. This is a podcast where a friend and I talk about our original characters, the good, the bad, and the self-inserts. And today, our guest is my friend Lindsay. How are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good.
Good. I am very glad to hear that.
Yeah.
God, everything... Right now, everything feels both, like, extremely pinned in time, but also completely unmoored.
Yeah.
It's so weird. I don't like it.
Yeah.
I just want days besides weekend and work week to mean anything anymore.
Yeah. I don't like this whole time is warped and space is bendable feeling.
Yep. Anyway. You may or may not have heard what we were just commiserating about, listeners, but suffice it to say that we're just feeling very unmoored in time right now. And speaking of being unmoored in time, we're here today to talk about a Harry Potter character that Lindsay has made. And we're going to preface this with Death of the Author about Harry Potter, okay?
Yeah.
The instant that the author who shall not be named finished Harry Potter and put it out into the universe, it became the intellectual property of all of the fans.
And the Harry Potter community is one that welcomes people of non-cishet gender and sexual identities, and also is not racist.
Yeah.
And there was never a book which then got adapted into a play that involved time travel and Voldemort's daughter. I don't know what you're talking about. Do you have any Death of the Author comments that you'd like to add, Lindsay, before we get started with your OC?
I will say that the only references to Pottermore shall be a couple of pre-Fantastic Beasts facts about various characters that I used for biographical details. Mm-hmm. And for plausible ages for my characters.
Yeah. That is all acceptable.
Yeah. Yeah, there was an earlier fanfic attempt where I had to add about a decade to all of the characters from the Black family.
Huh.
Yeah. There were...
That's definitely not your fault. The author who shall not be named was not always especially good at keeping track of the story elements.
Yeah, it feels like she's rather afraid of calculators.
I mean, as a fellow creative myself, I can understand.
But, like...
Math is scary, but also, like, it's not that hard to go through and do simple math.
Yeah, this is the simplest of simple math, and we have these wonderful things called phones that have calculator apps on them that can do all the work for you.
I mean, heck, even in Harry Potter they had abacuses.
Yeah.
Abacai? Abacuses.
Abacus, abacai.
Plurals. Who knows?
English is a dumb language, so yeah.
Nothing has any meaning anymore. It's fine.
Yeah.
Okay, that's too nihilistic. Let's talk about your OC.
Okay, my OC is Emma. She is from... I created her within the Harry Potter universe.
Yes. For what purpose?
She is meant to be a next generation character in fanfic that I have planned to write, but of course have either posted like a chapter and then was like, oh, I'm so embarrassed by this writing.
Yeah.
Or just decided I'll get around to it someday.
Oh, so you write like Tanner? look, we both love them, Tanner. This is a honey roast. I'm sitting over here looking at your AO3 account with one chapter each of every fic, except for your Glee sequel fic. We love you, honey roast.
Look, unwritten fan fiction is the reason why Tanner and I's podcasts exist.
Yes, which I love and support.
Yes, thank you.
Yes.
So anyway.
So, fanfic.
So, the entire idea was a Harry Potter Next Generation fic focusing on Teddy Lupin, who is...
Good choice.
Yes.
Good choice.
Because Teddy, the son of Remus and Tonks, is kind of like the oldest of the next-gen kids, and he would have been going to school at a very interesting time with Hogwarts, basically rebuilding.
Yeah.
And, like, I was writing this stuff, and I actually found myself kind of, I don't want to sound bad or anything, but, like, I was kind of finding myself bored with children. Also, I was just out of, like, high school, I was in university. Heck, I was writing this when I was taking a break between semesters and working at a ski hill.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very understandable to age out of the point where you necessarily gravitate towards writing characters who are children.
Yes, and it was also becoming harder for me to remember what I was like at 11 without cringing a lot.
Yeah. Hey, Lindsay, hey, listeners, learn to love the person that you were at 11. You can be exasperated at how feverishly into things you were. But remember that it's still passion for something, and that deserves to be loved and remembered fondly.
Yes.
Speaking as someone who has a self-insert OC whose name is, in fact, literally just the Japanese word for dream, because I was trying to be insightful.
Ah. So, anyway, Emma's main purpose, she came about as a character who was originally going to be kind of like a side character to a different character, a teacher slash the school psychologist that I had created.
Hey! What a concept!
I'm like, McGonagall is a smart lady, and she would have probably have realized that, oh yeah, homesickness and children being traumatized by this whole thing within our own community is a thing. Maybe we should get somebody who actually understands how the mind works.
What if we brought the British equivalent of Child Protective Services to Hogwarts?
They would have shut that place down so fast.
I mean, yes, probably.
Yeah, that is so many OSHA rules being broken.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, yeah. So, anyway, I created a school psychologist. One of the students slash people who come there for therapy was going to be this one girl who was dealing with some issues at home, depressed, because I have my issues with self-doubt and depression and all that other wonderful stuff. Yay.
Same. It's called being human.
Yep. We've all been there, and it's okay. Mm-hmm. It's okay. Just realize you're responsible for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You gotta take care of it. So, she eventually evolved as I kind of was developing this character into her own thing. Mm-hmm. Emma. And it also happened that Pottermore was around, and one of the persons that happened once you had gone through, like, some of the early chapters was you got sorted.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the test, honestly, is very... It wasn't great.
Yeah.
Because eventually, like, it came out that it was rather biased towards Gryffindor. And
may I tell you my Pottermore sorting story?
Yes.
So I was one of the people who got into the Pottermore beta.
Ooh.
Which, for those of you who are not on the internet at the time, you had to essentially follow a scavenger hunt. And then you had to, like, click on this like, not a pop-up, but this, like, floating element around the screen of a website, and then it would take you to the link that you could use to sign up for the Pottermore beta.
Oh, wow.
It was honestly, like, it was really fun.
Yeah.
Because this was back in, like, 2013?
Yeah.
It was, like, right around the start of the 2010s, so the internet was not quite as connected as it is today.
Mm-hmm.
So it was that kind of thing where it's like, oh, like, I think I might have seen about it on a Tumblr post or something that one of my Tumblr friends had shared, and then I went and I did it, and then I told my brother about it so he could get in, and then I went and I told my other friends at school and everything.
Yeah.
But, like, I took the sorting hat quiz and everything, and then I literally got to the part where it's like, and your house is, drumroll please, and then the website crashed. And then when I refreshed the page, it said Gryffindor! Yeah. And so I have accepted that label as my own, even though I am the Hufflepuffiest Gryffindor to ever Gryffindor.
I mean, it's really just like a personality test.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
It's an extremely basic personality test, but now it has pretty animations, apparently.
Yeah. So, from a very young age, I always identified as Ravenclaw.
Yeah.
For obvious reasons. Mm-hmm. And I still do.
Oh, but you're not referring to the wall of books that are behind you as we record.
Yeah. And how I've used up almost all of the Audible credits that I managed to accumulate on just nonfiction books for the past
And also your love of history and your love of learning.
Yes. And one of these days I gotta get off of my lazy butt and finally apply for that master's program to actually become a full-fledged archivist. Yeah, so I have always identified as Ravenclaw, but on Pottermore, because I clicked mostly on the options that had a very watery vibe to them, apparently that meant I was Slytherin.
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird. Which, like, if we're simply going off of the four classical elements and the four Hogwarts houses, that would mean that I would probably also be a Slytherin.
Yeah.
Which is absolutely untrue.
Yeah. Now, I will say that I can be... I do have some ambition, like, you know, going for the master's degree. Hey, that requires some ambition. Mm-hmm. But also a lot of mental fortitude and strength and perseverance because of, from what I heard from someone who was an actual master's student, 75% is considered failing.
Yikes.
Yeah. So, I have been warned.
Yeah. I don't like it.
Or at least at the... at the university I was going to at the time. Mm-hmm. You had to... because, like, the school I was going to is actually considered one of the better liberal arts schools in Canada. Huh. And has a long-standing liberal arts tradition, despite what the president of the school has tried to do with the business admin courses. Yeah. Nobody likes the business admin students.
I truthfully cannot, I do not have an opinion on this, but I agree with you on the disruption of the liberal arts courses at a liberal arts college.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's in the past. So I get sorted into Slytherin, and I do realize that, yes, I am rather ambitious. Like, I wouldn't have this job if I, the job I currently have, if I didn't have some ambition and just, like, took the risk and be like, you know what? Crap it, I'm gonna apply. And also, like, I am not meant to work in retail.
I don't blame you. Very few people are ever truly called to work in retail. Most people just kind of end up in working in retail. Hey, retail workers, sympathy and solidarity. We believe in you. You deserve higher pay. I know I literally said that in the last episode of Wayward, but I'm going to say it again.
Yes. You need all of that stuff. I'm just saying, personally, I wasn't built for retail.
Yeah, yeah.
So, basically, all of this prompted me to go, huh, Slytherin, they have a bad reputation within the Harry Potter universe, and even I wasn't that impressed with, like, a post, like, Battle of Hogwarts, trying to reform Slytherin because... I think the person who is writing the introductory letter for Slytherin House is trying to go for a whole punk rock vibe.
On Pottermore,
just
right?
Wasn't, yeah, on Pottermore. Yeah. But just wasn't quite, it didn't really sell it, and it came off as being really snobbish.
It was written by someone who didn't quite understand punk.
Yeah.
And they were trying to portray Slytherins as the bad kids, with a capital B, and a capital K, and a capital Z, or Z if you're in Canada.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm like, okay, what does Slytherin trying to reform actually look like? So that's what prompted me to write about Emma, who is an ambitious working-class Slytherin who eventually rises up to become the potions mistress of Hogwarts by the time... Yeah. Yeah, so she becomes that by about the time, I think... Harry's kids would have started attending Hogwarts.
Okay.
And also she has further dreams, like figuring out the underlying weird mathematical magic of the universe through alchemy. Yeah, I was also getting into some weird esoteric stuff.
Yeah. That does not surprise me.
Yeah. So, anyway.
Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Emma, the very basics is, she's born, why did my mouse move again? Okay. She was born in, County Donegal, which is, like, the most northern part of the Republic of Ireland you can go.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look on a map, it's, like, the one county that kind of, like, crooks up towards the Atlantic coast, right next to Northern Ireland. And she was born on February 8th, 1990. She's an Aquarius. She's got a 10 5/8 inch hawthorn wand with a unicorn hair.
Nice, nice.
Yeah.
I appreciate that you can tell that you made this character when you were
on Pottermore.
How old would you say?
I was
like 18, 19, something like that.
Yeah, around there.
Okay.
Yeah. That sort of attention to minute details that don't really actually matter.
Oh, see, I didn't remember what age you created Emma at, because I was going to say, like, oh, if you made this character in middle school, that's why you made note of the zodiac sign.
I'm still interested in, like, I read my horoscope.
Yeah.
But it's more of just, like, a weird reassuring thing.
Mm-hmm. The only things about horoscopes and astrology that I personally care about is when I'm trying to decide when a character's birthday is, and then I pick the zodiac sign that corresponds best to their personality.
Yeah.
But also, when all of those, like, aesthetics memes get posted on Instagram or whatever, and it's like, oh, like, what is my aesthetic as a Cancer? Oh, surprise, it's moon and pearls and green. Again.
Yeah. Libra, it's all fluffy clouds and looking pretty and pink. Look, just because you're ruled by Venus doesn't mean that you're always into super girly things. Okay, I do like girly things, but like...
That's allowed.
Yeah. It's one of those, I like some other options with my aesthetics, please.
Yes. Yes, please be more inventive, Instagram.
Yes.
Anyway, so Emma's an Aquarius.
Yes, she is an Aquarius, which also means very intellectually curious, head up in the clouds sometimes, but she's also, mm-hmm. strangely enough, very pragmatic and practical. I think that's more just being around Slytherins and being from a family that values practicality.
Yeah, so is she from a wizarding background then?
Yes, I decided that she was going to be from a wizarding background, but I played around with it a bit, where mm-hmm. her family, it started off with like, okay, how big would Ireland's wizarding population be? I actually look up the population of Ireland. Oh, it wouldn't be a lot. So there's not a lot of options for pureblood. So she's not going to be a pureblood just by sheer fact of mm-hmm. there's not a lot of people to choose from.
Also, hey, we forgot to add this in earlier. The whole blood status thing in Harry Potter is also a giant sham. Ignore that and do with it what you will.
Yeah.
PSA over.
Yeah. Well, I have a whole... The Brits are the only one who actually give a crud about it.
Oh, almost certainly.
Yeah. I have an Icelandic character who's like, yeah, we don't... That could never happen here in Ireland because there's only 3,000 of us wizards, technically.
Mm-hmm. Come to America and they're just like, shrug.
Yeah. Well, also, Iceland is like, yeah, we have a tiny population and no last name, so we had to develop an app to make sure you weren't accidentally stepping your cousin. Or close cousin.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. There's only like 300,000 people there, so yeah. So anyway, Emma's entire family thing, they're kind of like... They got nicknamed the Black Dorothys because they developed a rather bad reputation, and also I was going for, again, aesthetics and name meeting, because mm-hmm. Emma is dramatic for whole or universal, and Dorothy, mm-hmm. depending on which etymological source you go with, might mean either rebellious, destructive, or destroyer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like the idea of this tiny kid coming to Hogwarts and, hi, my name is Entire Destroyer.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, they're one of those families that it just seems like generationally not exactly the best people out there.
Okay.
Yeah. And her dad's kind of like the exemplar of it, like... I'm not too sure how I developed Mark Doherty, her father, other than, like, I remember watching a movie called Road to Perdition, which had Tom Hanks in it. It also featured, like, Paul Newman in his last role before he died. And it's all about, like, a father and son. The father is a hitman for a mob family in Chicago, and they get betrayed, and so it's only the dad and the son who survive, and they have to go on this road trip, basically. It's a hard movie to watch, but
I believe it's
really good. I also like gangster movies and all that. But one of the big conflicts between the father and the son is that the dad and son are very distant from each other, and the dad says, well, I see a lot of myself in you, and I don't want you to turn out like me.
Yeah.
So that's why I tend to push you away, because I'm a bad influence.
I'll never be like you, Dad.
But in this case, it's more like, Dad, I want to know more about you, and I do want, like, why do you treat me like this? And it's like, you're me. Unfortunately.
Oh, jeez. So,
thankfully, Emma doesn't go down that road, because she has some other adult influences in her life that are a lot better than her dad.
Good.
Yeah. Eventually, I rolled in some Thomas Shelby from Peaky Blinders, because I also like that show, but Tommy Shelby is not a good guy.
Okay. Duly noted.
Yeah.
Would you like to touch on the positive adult figures in Emma's life real quick?
So, first of all, there's the school psychologist, Dr. Brandt, who is, like, again, I was trying to figure out, like, what is wizarding psychology? Is it really a thing? Unfortunately, the author who shall not be named isn't exact. She's from an older generation, I know, and they weren't too keen about psychological help, about mental health and all that.
Yeah, emotional
health. So she's like, oh, they don't really need them. And I'm like, no, they need them.
Yeah.
They need therapists. So I was thinking, like, psychology is a bit of a newer thing. It was developed by Muggles. Some wizards aren't that keen on it, but others are like, we still don't understand much about the mind. Come on.
Harry Potter and Hermione Granger marched into the head office at Hogwarts and said, we're getting a psychologist as soon as we can find a magical person who is willing to get a degree.
Yeah. In this case, Dr. Brandt is like, well, I am from a country that basically developed. She's from Austria, so.
Okay, I was about to ask what on earth that accent was, so thank you for clarifying.
I was trying to go for a German accent, and I have failed.
I could tell that it was from a Germanic region. I was just like, I'm not good at discerning accents all the time, so I'm glad I asked.
I'm not good at mimicking accents. So basically, Dr. Brandt, yes, she is from Austria, and basically the birthplace of modern psychology, for better or worse.
Yeah.
Because Freud was
a piece of work.
The problematic guy who, yeah, a piece of work. But hey, we wouldn't have the whole field without him. So she's like, you know what? Sure, I'll come over to Britain. And I will work here. And she helps Emma out, realizing, hey, I don't have to worry about becoming like my dad. I can make my own self. I can learn to love myself.
It is not the circumstances of one's birth that determine one's destiny. You too.
And then, of course, I was thinking, okay, who's going to be the precious professor head of Slytherin? Oh wait, there's already one right there. It's called Professor Slughorn.
Yeah.
Now, I know that he isn't the best character out there, but Harry was already prejudiced against Slytherins to begin with.
Look, all Slughorn needs to do is to keep the seat warm until Emma is qualified to hold the position.
And I also figured that, hey, maybe he is actually a better teacher than Snape. Maybe he actually knows how to teach two children.
Yeah, I think that's even been, like, statistically, like, not statistically, but I feel like that's even been mentioned in the books. And the easiest, step one, don't abuse the children.
Yes. I've had my fair share of bad teachers, and I can tell you, they will instantly sour a student on a subject. So, and, like, one of the things that stuck with me from a lecture I had in a history course was about how some scholars within the history field, they're utterly brilliant, they're like movers and shakers within their field, do not let them teach the first year students.
Oh yeah. Speaking as someone who has been through, you know, a conventional education and also through higher education, and as someone who is related to a lot of people in the education field, there is a very, very distinct divide between people who are skilled in their field and people who are good at teaching to higher ed students. And by that, I'm including, like, not only, like, I'm including high school age, so
yeah.
15 to up until, you know, like, the age when you stop learning, I guess. And then also the kind of teachers and educators who are best at helping children. Yeah. And it is not often that you are able to find someone who can bridge the gap between those.
Mm-hmm.
And that a lot of times, people who have poor educational experiences, it's because their teacher was operating in something that they were not necessarily comfortable in or educated in.
Yeah. And, like, I'm not gonna forgive Snape for anything, but...
Oh, no, never.
He's one of those people who, I think he could have been a good teacher to, like...
The Slytherins.
Well, not just the Slytherins, I'm talking, like, the highest level kids, like the ones in the really advanced courses.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think he's one of those people who could not dumb down what he knew.
Yeah.
And, like, he clearly had a brilliant mind, he clearly knows what he's doing, but he...
He is not and never was good with kids.
Yeah. So I created a bit of a backstory where Slughorn was gearing up to retire.
Yeah.
Right after the first Wizarding War involving Voldemort. Mm-hmm. And he had someone lined up to take over his position as both head of Slytherin and the potions master. And then Dumbledore's like, hey, I'm gonna hire Snape for this position. And Slughorn's like, Snape's brilliant, but he will just destroy children.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Dumbledore's like, don't worry, I've got it covered. Spoiler alert, yeah. He didn't have it covered.
Yeah.
So then, did you kind of intend for Emma to be the potions master to rectify Snape's mistakes and to build on Slughorn's foundations?
Basically.
Okay.
Kind of in a retroactive way, where it's like, oh yeah, I'm also watching Full Metal Alchemist at the time. Wouldn't it be cool if we had someone who was actually, you know, into this sort of stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like Edward Elric, with a bit of ambition. Okay, she doesn't need to, like, get back her and her brother's bodies back.
Good. Great.
Yeah. But hey, not everybody's gonna try and transmutate the soul of their mother to get them back.
No, that takes a very, very special main character to do so.
Yeah. Yeah, no. The whole thing was, I want Emma to be a better teacher. And I want Emma to be a bit more, like, charismatic. She knows how to talk to kids. The first thing that Slughorn gets her to do, aside from, like, teaching her these more advanced skills, is, hey, how about you help out, like, the first years with learning the basics of this? And also, I was remembering back to my science classes when I was, like, 13? And in my first dedicated science lab, and we spent a solid week just learning Wemyss stuff?
Learning what?
Wemyss. You know, like, all the safety signs and the safety procedures when you're handling, like, chemicals and all that.
I was not familiar with that term, so thank you for clarifying it.
Okay. Workplace Hazardous Material Information System.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
Down here in America, we just called it the safety stuff.
Yeah, so, like, I know that wizards aren't the most safety-oriented people out there, and I know that there's magic for that, but I would imagine that they develop, like, at least some idea of, like, hey, maybe, like, cast a spell over this cauldron just in case it explodes.
Yeah, yeah.
Or, like, part of what the author used to develop her whole potion system was cooking. And sometimes when you make a mistake while you're cooking, you can sometimes figure out kind of a way to rectify the mistake.
Yeah, sometimes you can salvage it. Sometimes you can't.
Put too much salt in the thing, just add some honey. It balances the flavor out.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Yeah, but if you leave your bread in the oven too long, it does burn, and there's no coming back for that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, anyway, Emma starts off teaching, like, the first years and tutoring them and giving them the basic stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, this is your basic ingredients, this is the basic spells, very basic potions, mm-hmm. like the vinegar and baking soda stuff that you start chemistry with, because it's easy to clean up.
Yeah.
And it's not gonna destroy stuff. And then you move on to, like, Mentos and Pepsi.
Mm-hmm.
And there's gotta be some equivalent of, like, a fume hood, or, like, the rule of you don't, like, stick your nose in the chemicals to smell them, because you might... That's not good!
Yeah. I'd like to take a moment here to appreciate that the way that you've solved Hogwarts is by bringing in, first off, school psychologist, second, workplace safety, and third, student teachers.
Yeah. And, like, I gotta imagine that at full capacity, Hogwarts has multiple teachers in various subjects, if the numbers are right.
Yeah.
Which I doubt. Because, again, the author is bad at math.
Yeah, yeah. Adjusted for proper population scale, there would almost certainly need to be more than one teacher per subject.
Yeah. It's just, I mostly focus most of this fic, which turned into basically, like, a workplace comedy. On the main staff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, like, McGonagall struggles to find teachers because I had canon that maybe there was a bit of a brain drain within Wizarding Bryn.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, the first war with Voldemort took, like, 11 years, and it was, like, a low-level guerrilla warfare. I bet people left because they're like, I don't feel safe anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, Hogwarts went through so many Defense Against the Dark Arts teachers I bet by the end they're scraping at the bottom of the barrel, and McGonagall's just like, I'm gonna have to go further afield to find someone who is willing to come here.
Hey, here's a question. Who is the Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher when Emma teaches at Hogwarts? And is it Harry Potter?
No. I actually am kind of fine with Harry being an Auror, with, I think... Aurors were more like a big issue focused sort of thing. And, like, we are talking about a place that does have giants and I'm guessing other big creepy crawly magical creatures. So maybe that's the more day-to-day stuff that they handle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, making sure, I don't know, a revenant doesn't pop up in a Scottish churchyard somewhere and starts, like, sucking the life force from people.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
They have different things to worry about.
Yeah.
But I made an OC who, he's from Poland, and I didn't know anything about the Witcher at the time, but he's kind of like Geralt.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. And this is mostly built upon, like, stuff I researched about Slavic, witchcraft, mythology, paganism, all that sort of stuff. And also, just, like, a general, again, while I was a university student, some of the courses I took involved, like, medieval history and early modern history, which, of course, touches on the witch hunts in Europe, which are a factor that play into the backstory of the Harry Potter universe.
Mm-hmm.
But I quickly realized, oh, this is purely, like, a Western European, just where the Reformation was really bad sort of problem. So really, the only people who would be truly concerned about Muggles finding out about witches and wizards and still carry that trauma,
mm-hmm.
would be in the British Isles, specifically England and Scotland, France, Benelux, so like Belgium, Netherlands, and Luxembourg, mm-hmm. and Germany. That's like it. That was where it was the worst. And to a lesser extent, in Scandinavia. Like, yeah, there were people burnt at the stake for witchcraft in Spain and Italy, but like... Mm-hmm. those were mostly heretics.
Okay.
Because the Inquisitions there were far more concerned with heresy. They would just, like, add on a witchcraft charge. Just as the cherry on top of the awful sundae.
Yeah. As I think I have done in literally the last, like, 4 episodes of my podcast, I will apologize for the Catholic Church.
Hey, I'm not a practicing Protestant, I am an agnostic, but I do fully acknowledge that we Protestants have our fair share of badness, bad baggage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
I'm related by marriage to Oliver Cromwell, so, yeah.
I don't know off the top of my head who that is. Anyway, so, Emma's Defense Against the Dark Arts co-worker, who is from Poland.
Yeah, he comes from a culture that was far more concerned with vampires and werewolves.
Okay.
And all the other stuff that happens in Eastern Europe, because all manner of stuff happens in Eastern Europe. Mm-hmm. When you're in between two emergent empires, it's not a lot of fun.
No.
No.
I don't think so.
Yeah, and he grew up under the communist regime, so that's like, huh, that's an entire side plot there to how the wizarding community dealt with that.
Yeah.
It looks a lot like Master and Margarita in my hands. Yeah, so the whole thing is like, oh yeah, there's a major divide in Europe within the wizarding community about the statute of secrecy and whether or not it should exist anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because...
Come to America, where it's like, hey, that kid, that kid's shooting magic out of their hands! Woohoo!
I wouldn't... My biggest theory with Canada is that there is a lot of back and forth between several groups about what's the proper way of doing stuff and what is appropriation, and how do we teach this in French? How do we translate this? Oh, we'll just do the magical equivalent of Google Translate.
Yes. Okay, so this coworker of Emma's, what's his name? Yeah. We haven't said his name yet. Mark Roshan.
Okay. And... Yeah, he isn't quite like Geralt. He's actually a lot more, you know, chill and actually enjoys children. He's a father himself. And
aw, good.
Yeah, and he's basically like a really good guy. English isn't his strong suit. It's like his third language.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's coming from a very different tradition when it comes to how to deal with magical problems.
Mm-hmm.
And the dark arts, because, as I said earlier, they probably had a lot more concern, both muggles and the wizarding community, with vampires.
Yeah. So, Emma has this one coworker, Markislav?
Marek Roshan.
Marek Roshan. Okay. So, yeah. Emma has this one coworker, Marek Roshan. Who are her other friends in the teacher staff of Hogwarts?
So, of course, there's Neville, who is the new herbology teacher.
Yes, Neville is great.
Yes, and he is still, like, super... just the sweetest person ever.
Yeah.
eventually, Slughorn retires. McGonagall... I still have her as the professor, like, as the headmistress long into the future.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's one of my favorite characters, and I like her a lot.
Yeah. If anyone deserves to live for a good long time, it's her.
Yeah.
Also, Nadia so does Hammoudi. Maggie Smith.
Yes. Nadia Hammoudi is the Muggle Studies professor, and she is really into, like, old punk music.
I support her very much.
Yes. And radios and all that sort of stuff. She teaches through a lot of Muggle pop culture.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So hey, that way when the wizards are out in the Muggle world, they don't have to pretend they know what they're talking about if someone asks them how the local sports team is doing. Or hey, did you catch the concert the other night? Why, yes, I caught the concert on the television.
Yeah. My one Canadian teacher is Jezebel Storm.
She oh my god.
History, yeah, she's the history magic professor.
Are you sure that's not your self-insert, Lindsay?
I do put myself into almost every characters to some minor degree.
Oh yeah.
Like, this... Jezebel Storm is far more cooler than I would ever be. Also, she loves pugs.
Look, I didn't have to... I didn't say whether or not she was, like, the OC that's like, it's like me, but better. I just said, oh, is no, this also no. your self-insert OC?
No, Emma's far more my insert OC because she's more, like, got my mental stuff, even though I have a fantastic relationship with my father.
Yeah.
No, that isn't a specifically suspicious denial. I do, indeed, love my dad.
Glad to hear it.
Yeah. Basically, as soon as I turned 18, we became equals. I decided to make ghoul studies a mandatory course, and it's taught by Shin Marita, who is...
Make what studies?
Ghoul studies. Ghoul so the study studies. Of, like, ghosts.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was like an elective course, but I'm like, this sounds too cool not to make it an actual course.
Ectology.
Yeah. And I love ghost stuff. One of my favorite shows is BuzzFeed Unsolved on YouTube.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You and Emma should talk about how much you love that show.
Yes. So, also, like, I haven't read a lot of Junji Ito. I'm not a big horror person, paradoxically.
Mm-mm.
But
nope, me either.
I do appreciate the sort of stories he tells. Mm-hmm. And again, this is also Lindsay trying to get a far more diverse cast of characters with different backgrounds and different understandings of the magical world.
Yep.
Let's see, I made Padma Patel the head of Ravenclaw. Mm-hmm. And because she was the Ravenclaw twin of the Patel twins,
yeah,
and the Transfigurations professor.
Okay, okay.
Because that also seems like a very
cerebral.
Cerebral, fairly complicated course, mm-hmm. as was presented in the books.
Yeah,
Cho Chang. I created an entirely new course called Comparative Magic, where basically the students, you know, learn about different magical systems, because it's also hinted at that there are different magical systems.
Yeah.
Even if the author didn't really intend it to be that way, but hey, once you show ritual magic about once and also include alchemy as an optional course, mm-hmm. You have my attention, and I'm going to build on that.
Yes. Yes, the author who shall not be named gave you bones, and you said, yes, these will make a very nice skeleton.
Yeah. The runes professor is originally from Iceland because I'm like Vikings.
Yes.
I must have a Viking. And, I decided that at some point, Hagrid starts, you know, feeling his age. He needs someone to help him out with the care of magical creatures because apparently that one is, you start losing limbs? Apparently.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he gets an assistant. An unusual assistant. One of the children of the giant spider who lived in the forest.
Aragog.
Yeah.
Huh.
I'm like, giant spider who likes cute things.
Interesting.
Like, yeah, can talk and all that. Why not? Also, it speaks to my lack of arachnophobia. I'm a big old ophidiophobe. I don't like snakes. So yeah, Aeolob is the sweetest giant spider you will ever meet.
Yeah.
And Care Magical, or the groundskeeper, I created a new character for that named Mickey Doyle, who's a bit of a... He's a bit of a weirdo. Doesn't talk a whole lot. But he goes into the forest and deals with the stuff in the Forbidden Forest. So he's the one who does most of the communications with the centaurs. And, it was also a way to explore some of the deeper, weirder, fairy-related magic in there.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. And then there's Zachariah Smith.
Oh, not
who
him.
Who was the complaining guy from, the fifth book, I think he was introduced.
Yeah, the one that Hermione dated to make Ron jealous.
No, that was Cormac McLaughlin. Zachariah Smith was the Hufflepuff.
He was the smug one.
Yeah. Yeah, so Zachariah Smith just existed to voice Ferris' complaints, and I made him into a useless teacher of the charms class.
Oh, no.
He eventually does get fired, but the only reason why he had the job was because his parents donated enough money to rebuild the library, so...
Nepotism.
Yeah. And McGonagall wasn't exactly in the position to refuse. Yeah. So, he's a bit of a, not exactly the prick. Greatest guy. Yeah, he's a prick who often passes the buck on everything.
Yep.
The poor prefects in his house do far more work than he does.
I believe it.
Yeah. So basically he's the comic arch nemesis to Emma, who is all ambition.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I have, like, one quick question, which is, given that Emma both, went to school at and then works for Hogwarts, what is the craziest, like, most bonkers thing that you had her doing, either as a student or as a teacher?
I think there was one idea I had where she was operating a still in a closet.
Oh my god.
It doesn't help that I was watching. Was this as a student
or as a teacher?
Both.
Okay, so she put a still in Hogwarts, and then when she graduated, like tapped the wall of the castle and said, "Keep this safe for me, I'll be back someday." And the castle made, like, a winky face with the bricks.
Yeah, MASH is both a very good and very bad influence on me.
Look, like, I understand that completely. I literally used Father Mulcahy as, like, one of the three characters for my cleric in D&D.
Yeah, there are so many good characters on that show.
It's so good.
Yeah, the main connection between Emma and, I guess Hawkeye on MASH is that they both have stills. She makes rather bad whiskey out of potatoes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I'd imagine that there's a lot of potatoes lying around.
I mean, probably.
Yeah. So, aside from having the still somewhere in a girl's washroom at Hogwarts. One of her plot points was more when Teddy was going to be there, and he and his friends get lost in the Forbidden Forest. And this is a way to explore and sort of build upon the place of fairies and the fair folk within the Harry Potter universe, because that's never really touched upon.
Yeah.
And there's this implication that they're more like Tinkerbell, except less sentient, basically.
Yeah, because I think I feel like the only fairy that I remember from Harry Potter were the Cornish Pixies from book 2.
Yeah.
And, or from Chamber of Secrets. The book and the movie.
Yeah. And, like, I like me some fair folk.
Mm-hmm.
I like them being creepy and ominously powerful, and my entire idea on the world-building sense was that there are these pocket dimensions, and maybe Hogwarts is in more of a pocket dimension than, like, just having cloaking spells and all that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, I mean, it has to.
Yeah. There is just... It goes into kind of, like, the... I said this somewhere else about the author's world building. They did a lot of world building for, like, the first, I would say, two and a half books.
You can use the author's correct pronouns. We all know who we're referring to here.
Yeah. Yeah. She did, I swear she did most of her world building in the first 2.5 books, and a bunch actually came up in the 6th book because of editorial reasons. But, like, the further out she got from Hogwarts, the less stable her world building was, let's say. And basically the older me had too many questions. So I'm like, okay, here's a way to fill this out. Why certain stuff doesn't appear to happen, or like why muggles can't interact with something. Fairies. They helped with like the early construction, like way back in the day, and they have otherwise fairly nothing else to do with the wizards because the fae folk work in their own mysterious ways.
That is very true, and I like that idea. That is a good one.
Yeah. So, Emma has to rescue Teddy and his friends, and they wind up interacting with a Wild Hunt, and this leads to a bigger plot that I never got around to because I got distracted by other stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Valid.
Yeah. But, yeah, a lot of the stuff is going to be, like, working around how to get some of these more bigger magical personages into the Wizarding World without breaking the established rules.
Yo, break them.
Yeah. Eventually, death, it just became
death of
them.
The author. The canon is ours.
Yeah. Yeah, so eventually I'm just like, screw this. And basically, like, the biggest flaw with the entire world building was the author didn't realize that she was writing an urban fantasy and kind of wanted to have, like, a Narnia-style fantasy, but also had the convenience of having the modern world as a place to go to, but, like, not wanting to deal with that and all the implications therein.
Yeah.
And I haven't even read the Dresden Files, and I was drawing from what I could glean.
See, that's what I was thinking of, because I haven't read them either, but I've read a lot of the TV Tropes pages, and I know that I want to read it.
Yeah.
Mostly so that I can talk with my friend Melissa about them. And also because it sounds like they're actually relatively kind to Catholicism, which I appreciate. And deists in general.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is probably a good point for me to ask. Is there anything that you would like to talk about briefly about Emma before we go into the final question?
I think the thing that really is important to Emma is her psychological journey from being kind of, you know, I don't want to get stereotypical with teens, but, you know, you're going through a lot as a teenager. She doesn't come from the best place, and she's dealing with a lot. Oh god, I'm talking about my Pokemon character now. But there is growth, and you can become better than what you were before, and you can learn to love yourself and accept yourself, and like, hey, it's okay to feel this way, just know you have to take care of yourself. And there are people who love and appreciate you and want to help you out, and are, you know, stop letting that voice in your head control you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's very good, Lindsay.
It's something that I have to remind myself practically every day, so.
It's a good thing for all of us to do our best to remember.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Oh, I have one very last question.
Okay.
Does she have a magical pet?
Oh, crud. I never thought about that.
Oh my gosh, are you serious?
Yeah. Like, I did give her a Patronus. Sparrow.
Oh, I was about to ask what it was, because that's the other identifying character test.
Yeah.
Within the Potterverse.
Yeah. So, originally I was going to give her a seal, because part of her family's backstory is that they're descended from Selkies, but then I'm like, I got really attached to the sparrow imagery. Like, the sparrow is not the most impressive looking bird, but, like, they're tough little things. Mm-hmm. And they go through a lot, and they're very adaptable.
Yes.
And I think that my reasoning at the time was that she identified the sparrows first as, like, I'm not that important, I'm not significant. But then she realizes that, no, everything is important and significant, including myself, including these sparrows. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, she just got very attached to sparrows.
Good.
Also, I listen to sparrows every morning because they like to sit in the tree right outside of my apartment and scream. Aww.
Yeah, they scream.
Yeah.
They scream very loud.
Yes. Also, I drew many quotes from the, oh, I forget what that bird meme is called, but it's like the angry birds with like the sayings like, I would sell you to Satan for a single corn chip.
Yes, yes, yes. I know exactly the ones that you're talking about. I don't remember what they're actually called either, but I know.
Yeah. So. Yes. Some of her best lines come from those.
Good.
Yes.
Good. Okay, so now it's time for the actually really real, I promise this time, last question of the recording. Which is, why do you love Emma so much? And I'm going to extend this to Emma and the greater world that you've created, because we did spend a lot of time talking about, like, how the greater world of Wizarding Britain has been adapted and diversified.
Yeah, at least my attempts, which... aren't exactly perfect, but not
your attempts, the way that you have adapted it.
Yeah, just thinking about it, I think why I love Emma and why I keep going back to her, and I swear to God one of these days I will actually write my workplace comedy set at Hogwarts, is because I was going through stuff at the time, she's going through stuff, and it was a way for me to at least address some of the stuff I was going through and talk about it, at least to myself, in a way that I could, like, fully understand and examine. And I basically set out to create a very human character. Yeah, she's a bit of a self-insert, but, like, who isn't? And there's just, it's hard to describe. It's the whole, like,
she's very important to you.
Yeah,
this doesn't have to be, like, an insightful reason. You can just say you love this character because you love this character.
Yeah, I love this character because I love this character, and she was created during an interesting time in my life, and is an excellent excuse to create pen boards.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And she, basically writing about her and creating her helped get some stuff out that I needed to get out. Mm-hmm. And plus, I was able to at least let her grow into a healthier, happier adult.
Good. We love a well-adjusted OC on this show.
Yeah. So, yeah. That is Emma Doherty. I really should not attempt an Irish accent.
It's okay. We all can learn.
Yeah.
Okay, so thank you so much, Lindsay, for coming on the show. We didn't mention this at the beginning. You've been on the show before. This is technically your first and a half appearance.
Yeah.
When I had Tanner on for the 50th, I told them, I was like, okay, this is your second and a half appearance on the show.
Yeah.
sharing an episode counts as half, so now you have one and a half under your belt.
Yay!
Yeah, so, where would you like to be found on the internet? Do you have anything that you would like to promote and or share and or shout out? This is the time.
So, I'm on Twitter at LindsayM476, and you can get to all my other social media stuff from there.
I'll be honest, I thought you weren't gonna catch yourself.
I had to think about it for a second. So, I am the second half of Not If I Reboot You First with Tanner. Mm-hmm. And we basically reboot things before Hollywood has the chance to. I'm also the voice of Belle on Pokemon Adventures in the Millennium. Mm-hmm. And we should be coming out with a new episode soon.
Nice.
Yeah. Ryan has been power editing, and I am a bit afraid.
Good for
him. Both of his growing abilities, and I hope he doesn't exhaust himself.
Well, I mean, look, like, I forget, do you two live together?
Yeah.
It's called, like, if he's in his room for too long and you hear, like, the click, 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 clack of, like, the keyboard, just, like, go and And I believe that you could physically drag him out of his room to relax if you had to. Use your old military training and just, like, suplex him out of his editing chair.
Yeah. And be like, Ryan, we're going for ice cream.
Do it.
Yeah, I also have Pinterest boards, but I think you can also get to them through my Twitter, so yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the link on your Twitter.
Yeah.
The Home for Your OCs is a part of the Corner Podcast Network. It can be found on iTunes or Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Acast, Stitcher, and hopefully every other podcast platform that you're looking on. If we're not there, let me know and I will work on getting there. Our theme song is Violet by Potty to Bear, courtesy of the Free Music Archives. New episodes come out on the 2nd and 4th Mondays of the month. If you'd like to get in touch with us, we can be found on Twitter at WaywardOCPod or through the WaywardOCPod hashtag. And you can also email us at waywardocpod@gmail.com. And I do believe that I have at least 2 more guests lined up. So that puts me at about mid-July. So around the beginning of July, expect an announcement in regards to guest submissions. But before then, if you'd like to be on the show, feel free to send me an email or a tweet at the official Wayward account, and we can talk about getting you on the show. And as with all podcasts, it is always incredibly helpful if you can rate and review us on your listening platform of choice. And if you are rating on a platform that is not iTunes or Apple Podcasts, please send it to me, and so that way I can see it and thank you by username on the podcast, because all of that helps us to find a wider audience and to brighten more people's days. So thank you all for listening. This has been the Home for Wayward OCs, and we hope you enjoyed your stay.
Just look up the English Civil War. He's the one who canceled Christmas for, like, 20 years in England.
How dare he?
The Puritans were no fun.
We must have Christmas.
The holidays are just around the corner, and there's no better place to enjoy them than Christmastide, Ohio.
This idyllic town is just the place to enjoy any winter celebration.
We've got candle and tree lightings.
Carolers singing your favorite holiday classics.
Bakers baking yummy treats.
Kids on bikes.
Dancing, parades, and more.
Take a spin on the peppermint twist at the historic Candy Cane Amusement Park.
Get warm and cozy at the Gingerbread House Bed and Breakfast.
Indulge in a world-famous snow pear at Partridge Farms.
Whatever you're celebrating, celebrate it with us in Christmastide, Ohio.
For more information, please go to ChristmastideOhio.com.